Okay, I will call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:38 PM on Tuesday, March 1st, 2022. And present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative LeBron, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. And at this meeting, we will hear subcommittee closeout reports. The intention is to go through subcommittee reports grouped together by the chair of the subcommittee. And I expect we'll spend about 10 minutes on each subcommittee, and legislative finance will be available for questions. We'll begin with the Department of Commerce, with Representative Edgman, and then continue on with corrections and fish and game. And so with that, I would invite Representative Edgman's staff to be also available for questions, and it's Mr. Witten. And so if you could go ahead and come to the table, and with that, Representative Edgman, feel free to take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate you allowing me to go first. I'll do my best. I mean that seriously, because I actually have to be gone for the next couple of days, and also for wherever I may trip, others can certainly benefit from it. But I'll do my best to make this quick as possible. Starting with the Department of Commerce, I'd like to note that this is an agency that has a fairly minuscule amount of UGF, as we call it. So to start the report, in terms of the funding sources that the department relies on, that unrestricted general fund portion of UGF is $10,151,000. Turning to the designated general funds that come into the department from fees or receipt-based expenditures and things of that nature, that's $56,486,000. The other fund category is $49,565,000. And then the federal fund portion of the Department of Commerce is $22,258,004. So all that adds up to about $138,460,000 for the Department of Commerce, Mr. Chairman. There's about 520 positions in the department. 550 of those are full-time positions, 5 are temporary. And then turning to the action of the budget subcommittee itself, we did review, of course, the FY23 budget request, including amendments, and recommend the following actions to the full finance committee: that we accept the governor's budget proposal with the following changes, adding intent language instructing the department to develop a plan to stabilize and set fee structures, develop a new system for leveling the cost of appeals and investigations, and target fee relief for industries and occupations that are in high need and have a high cost of entry. And clearly the Department of Commerce, like every other agency, has had to deal with the effects of the pandemic and the additional expenses and sort of the unpredictability involved in the last basically 2 years. So continuing on to the changes that the subcommittee is putting forward. That's I just went through the first change, and change two, and then ultimately change three. Change two would be we added $250,000 in UGF for grants that would be made available, basically to small businesses on a competitive basis to those small businesses that are operating under the currently active Small Business Innovation Research or Small Business Technology Transfer Grant Program. And this is a program that involves money that if these small businesses were to successfully apply, would allow them to compete and to benefit from several billion dollars of a federal program that is out there to be made available. The last recommendation for the Commerce Subcommittee is to, we suggest that we add $300,000 again in UGF and intent language to deal with the chronic recruitment and retention problem that I think befalls every agency that's out there these days. But we're recommending $300,000 be added, and money that'd be dispersed as sign-on and relocation bonuses for new hires or performance bonuses for current hires throughout the department. And I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to look to Mr. Witten to see if I've left anything out, but I think that comprises the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Witten, if you can put yourself on the record.
Chair Seth Witten, Staff to Rep. Edgman. Yes, Mr. Chairman, that does cover all the changes to the governor's proposed budget, and if there are questions on any of those action items in the governor's budget, we can discuss those in further detail.
Great, thank you. Does the committee have any questions regarding Department of Commerce? Representative Rasmussen?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Do we know how much money the department still has available to appropriate from federal COVID money for, I know there was small business relief and all of that money. Just curious if they dispersed all of that.
To Representative Rasmussen's question, well, Mr. Witten may be looking for the exact figures. What I can tell you is that most of it's been dispersed, the vast majority of it. I think there's a small amount that hasn't. I'm looking also at Ledge Finance, if the analysts might have any of those numbers nearby. But the bulk of it has been, been put out.
Mr. Witten?
Through the chair, what I am able to tell you is that on January 27th, we reviewed ARPA funding and grants to tourism and other businesses. There was $90 million was appropriated, and there were 363 grants approved, totaling $459 million. As far as remaining funding for businesses, I don't have that number right in front of me.
Okay. And if anybody in Ledge Finance in the audience or the department is has the number, feel free to raise your hand back there. Otherwise, we can get back to folks, I think, in a written form. It looks like I'm getting the nod there, so it looks like they'll do that. Representative LeBon?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I recall from a prior presentation about half of that $90 million remains to be dispersed, maybe a little less than half.
Okay. And I think the department will probably get something official back to us. Representative Rasmussen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess just to quickly follow up, I wasn't in that subcommittee. I'm just curious what the rationale for the $250,000 is. Was it the department that asked to bring it to include that, or? It seems like if we had $90 million go out in the last year or two to small businesses, I'm not quite sure what the intention of $250,000 is. Thank you.
Representative Edgman?
Yes, through the co-chair to Representative Rasmussen, the recommendation did come from a subcommittee member. It didn't come from the department. The department was neutral on it. The rationale was that this money was basically seed money to allow for a qualifying smaller business to be the recipient of a program, and I'm struggling to remember if it was $2 or $3 billion that's at the federal level, but that this seed money could leverage a lot more money on the federal end of things for small businesses in Alaska.
Any further comments or questions? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have two questions. First one is along the first bullet of recommendations from the subcommittee. What did we identify as the occupations that are high need or have a high cost of entry? And if that's something that a list could be provided later, that would be fine too, rather than having a discussion here over it. But if it's not known, that would be my first question.
Or Mr. Witten?
Through the chair, on February 9th, the subcommittee received a letter from the department. Representative Carpenter, through the chair, those occupations who were anticipating fee increases were concert promoters, dental, dispensing opticians, euthanasia services, guardians and conservators, marital and family therapy, massage therapists, medical, nursing home administrators, optometry, psychology, social workers, and veterinarians.
Can we get a copy of that letter?
Sure. Mr. Witten, if you could do that. Mr.
My second question would be in regards to the previous conversation with the leftover CARES Act money or COVID relief money, which whichever pool of money it's coming from, the $550,000 of UGF that was recommended, is the department capable of using the remaining CARES Act money for those purposes? That would be the question that I would have.
Representative Edgman?
Yes, my recollection, Mr. Co-Chair, to Representative Carpenter's question is that the department felt that that they needed additional time, but that the money would be spent in a manner that would be beneficial to the beneficiaries.
Mr. Whitten?
Through the chair, if I may, that $550,000, just so that we're clear, is the $250,000 for the grant program for businesses that are already receiving funding from a federal agency for that small business information and research grants. And our dollars would be the last in for that. That's that $250,000. And then the $300,000, that's the second part, I think, of the $550,000 reference, is actually a UGF increment for the department for them to use for recruitment and retention purposes in their inside of the department.
Thank you. I guess the follow-up then, Mr. Chairman, is the concept of using the federal relief funds to supplant UGF is something that we have been doing all along. And that's the question that I'm asking is, can the remaining, if we've got half of the original appropriation remaining to be dispensed, is it possible to use that to supplant the UGF cost here for these two programs? That's what I'm asking the question of.
Mr. Whitten?
Representative, I totally misunderstood the question, so I defer to Mr. Whitten.
Mr. Whitten.
Through the chair, Rep. Carpenter, my understanding from the department, and perhaps we can get greater clarification from them, but is that the ARPA revenue replacement money is for businesses, nonprofits, municipalities, and there are, you know, different amounts that were set aside for all of that. In terms of whether that funding would be available for these other recommendations for the subcommittee, I am not super familiar with the requirements on that funding and can't speak to that.
Okay. Representative Kerr.
Yeah, I think at least the $250,000 increment of UGF that is supposed to be seed money that would go out to grants to small businesses who were applying to federal agencies for grants of federal money seems that that would be a plausible thing to use CARES Act money on. I guess we just need an answer back from the administration as to whether that's feasible for them to use the money, and given the rules that they have under. Maybe the $300,000 UGF for recruiting and retention can't be used, but I guess I would just like some feedback from the administration on whether that, what their thoughts are.
Mr. Whitten, if you could maybe just follow up with the administration, ask them to get something in to the committee in writing. Great, thank you. If it is. Okay, House Finance back on record. The time is currently 1:55 p.m. on Tuesday, March 1st. Just a little bit about process. So we're accepting subcommittee reports today and tomorrow. Today we've got, looks like, I believe, 9. And these are subcommittees have gone in and met with the departments and vetted the proposals from the governor. You know, questions have come up both in subcommittee, but they will also be coming up in this process as well, and as it, they should be. And so typically what happens is we'll accept the subcommittee reports, kind of go through. We'll, questions will be raised as they are being raised right now. And you know, we've had department overviews, and now we're getting these reports. So I think, you know, finance subcommittee members are you know, questions are coming up throughout this process, and this is not the last stop in terms of what gets kicked out of finance. So these subcommittee reports will be rolled up into the first committee substitute, which is CS1, and once that's done, we hope to get that rolled out this Thursday. And then we'll be taking public testimony so that the public can see what's in this newest version of the budget in CS1. And then on later on Thursday, as well as mostly Friday and Saturday, I will be taking public testimony. And then we'll hear from the public. And if there are any concerns from the public, we'll come back next week, starting next Tuesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Members can offer amendments based on the concerns that have come up today, as well as concerns that come from the public, and we can fine-tune the budget and hopefully kick that out of finance and onto the House floor. But as Representative Edgeman, you mentioned, typically this isn't, I think it's a good place to raise the concerns, but not to necessarily try to solve everything today. Otherwise, I think, you know, it would be a very long process, and that's probably more focus for next week, where we'll have most of the week to make the adjustments to the budget. But I do welcome all the questions that are coming up, because that will help folks to formulate which amendments they want to present next week. So with that, are there any questions? I don't see any questions. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to, since we had already, we kind of started down this road, being the finance member on this committee, we did go through this thoroughly on Saturday. And so I'll just put my, you know, my concerns more on the record, so we don't have to go back through those. Some of those were the same as the representative from Kenai, but one was that could the $250,000, you know, what, how big could the businesses be? It was 500 people. It was my question was, could it be used? You know, could we use some of the stimulus, or not stimulus funds, but the some of the other funds for that. That was, you know, that was a question. Like, there was just, we had some similar questions have already been raised and answered on the $250,000. Another one was on, I'm just gonna go through my little list of, on the $300,000. My question on that was, or my concern on that, which is it's recruitment and retention, is where did the number come from? Why are we landing on 300,000? And wouldn't that be more appropriate as a larger discussion? So I'm, you know, that was one of my concerns and one of the reasons that I had voted against including that. And is there one more? I can't remember if we added more. There wasn't much that got added in. I did have one other concern in the department budget itself, which I did not raise a amendment to, and that was the double funding of the actuarial position. So we discussed all of those at length and before we did the closeout.
Great. Thank you, Representative Johnson. I don't know if Representative Edgeman, when you started off by saying we'll be, how did you state that, something to the effect of you'll be the test subject for our I don't know if you want to retract that, but okay. Any further questions or concerns on Department of Commerce? Okay, hearing none. So that is the first of three for Representative Edgeman. The next one, Representative Edgeman, do you have any final comments on Department of Commerce?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson just said, there were, you know, support and concerns on both sides of the issue in terms of the amendments for the Department of Commerce that we're bringing forward as recommendations. So I would certainly look forward to an additional conversation should there be amendments to that effect.
Thank you. So next we'll move over to the Department of is Fish and Game, I believe. Oh, I'm sorry, Department of Corrections. And with that, Representative Edgeman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Correction submits the following recommended operating budget for FY23 to the full Finance Committee. In terms of overall spending for the department, the budget is $401,276,000 and change. This is one of those state agencies where the bulk of its funding comes from unrestricted general funds or state dollars, if I put it that way. The total amount for UGF is $361,402,000. The DGF component is $14,272,000 in the change. And the other fund component is $8,978,000. And add in the federal funds of $16,622,000. All that together combines to form the base amount or the total amount, the recommended amount of $401,276,000. The unrestricted general fund difference from the FY23 adjusted base to the House subcommittee budget recommendations before us is an increase of $13,317. And that's about 3.8% above the FY23 adjusted base. Relative to the positions in the department, there is a total of 2,109 positions in the department. Those are all listed as full-time positions. And turning to the action that the subcommittee took, the subcommittee reviewed the entire budget considered members' amendments, and we recommend the following actions: that we accept the governor's budget proposal with a couple of changes. One is to add 150,000 UGF and one support staff or human resources position to the recruitment and retention unit to aid in recruitment efforts. And, you know, similar to the department that we just discussed, this department as well is having chronic issues with recruitment and retention of employees. So that's action item number one. Number two would be to recommend adding $4 million in unrestricted general funds to support the continuation of the regional and community jails program. And that's a program where 15 smaller communities around the state basically act as pre-trial units in their home community. And have a sort of a sharing arrangement with the Department of Correction, where the Department of Correction pays for part of those expenses, and then the municipality at the local level puts the bill for the rest of it. And that program, I think through the governor's budget, would be about $7 million. The subcommittee is recommending upping that to $11 million, adding $4 million more. And that, Mr. Co-Chair, would be the report for Department of Corrections.
Okay, do we have any questions for the Department of Corrections? Okay, I think we worked out the kinks on the first one. Representative Edgeman, I think we'll move over to the Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the Department of Fish and Games Budget Subcommittee reports, I'll get on this, the funds that comprise the funding sources for the department, and I'll just start at the top with unrestricted general funds, UGF. That's $53,974,000. The designated general fund portion, DGF, is $14,940,000. The other funds component is $70,316,000. And lastly, the federal funds component is $91,549,000, and all that totals to $230,780,000. And very differently than the Department of Corrections, which we just went through, this is the state agency that gets a lot of funding from non-state funded programs, if you will, and certainly that will probably be discussed later on. So the unrestricted general fund difference from the FY23 adjusted base to the budget recommendations that you have before you is an increase of about $323,000, and that's 0.6% above the FY23 adjusted base. Fish and Game is a department that has a lot of seasonal employees as well as a lot of permanent employees. And so of the total 1,419 employees, the permanent full-time employees are 816, and those permanent part-time employees are 598. And then in terms of temporary employees, it says that there's five for the department. So the subcommittee is recommending that we accept the governor's budget proposal with a couple of changes, and those changes are that a fund change of 300,000 UGF replacing a like amount that would normally have come from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission receipt account, that amount be substituted with UGF money to address the projected shortfall in the CFEC fund. And that's a bit of a mouthful. I'd be happy to speak to that later if further clarification is needed. So the last recommendation from the subcommittee on the Department of Fish and Game budget is that the governor's request to essentially transfer the EVOs, and I'm going to see if I can get this right, Exxon Valdez oil spill trustees accounts, does that get that right? Was denied, and in doing so, the governor's request to reduce, basically to transfer the $226,000 that would have went from the Department of Fish and Game to the Department of Environmental Conservation, that component was denied because we denied the underlying action, which was to transfer the trustees council as a sort of a policy call. With that, Mr. Co-Chair, I think that that finishes up the Department of Fish and Game.
Okay, do we have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you very much, Representative Edgman. So that will next take us over to Representative Ortiz. And so thank you, Mr. Whitten. If we could have Ms. Liz Harpold also come up to the table, just be available for questions. And so Representative Ortiz has three subcommittees, which is Department of Environmental Conservation, Transportation, and also Education. So we'll start off with DEC. And I think Representative Ortiz, are you kicking this off, or Ms. Harpold?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I would like to differ a little bit from Representative Edgman's process in that I would like to go directly to Liz Harpold, who staffed the DEC committee for the basic presentation.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Harpold, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Representative Ortiz. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Environmental Conservation submits the following recommended operating budget for the FY 2023 budget to the House Finance Committee. Total budget of $81,967,000 is comprised of $18,202,000 UGF, $21,463,000 designated general funds, $17,579,000 of other funds, $24,921,000 of federal funds. There's a small increase in the use of unrestricted general funds from the FY23 adjusted base to the FY23 House subcommittee budget of $1.6 million, which equals an increase of 10.2%. The vast majority of that is made up of a fund source replacement of using UGF instead of oil and hazardous waste funds, since that fund was swept and it would have been hollow authority for this year's budget. There are a total of 467 positions in this department. Of that, 466 are permanent full-time and one is temporary. The budget subcommittee considered the nine budget action items from the governor. They accepted five of them and rejected four. The items the subcommittee adopted are a fund source change to replace Ocean Ranger fees with UGF for fish tissue sampling, fund source change for air permitting activities and the fund source change that I spoke to earlier, using UGF instead of oil hazardous receipt authority. And the items the committee rejected are two items associated with moving the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council to DEC from Fish and Game, as well as the assumption of 404 primacy and hazardous waste management subtitle C primacy. That concludes my report of the DEC Budget Subcommittee.
Do you have any questions regarding DEC? Okay, seeing no questions, we'll move over to the Department of Transportation. Ms. Harpold?
Again, for the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Representative Ortiz. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities submits the following recommended operating budget for FY 2023 to the House Finance Committee. A total budget of $708,851,000. Of that, $136,781,000 UGF, $47,981,000 of DGF, $416,631,000 of other funds, and $107,456,000 federal funds. There is an increase in UGF use from the FY23 adjusted base to the FY23 House Subcommittee budget of $69 million, which equals 102.1%. And that sounds like a big scary number, but part of that has to do with the fact, a large part, is that the AMHS budget was in the language section of the bill last year, and because of that not being in the numbers section, it was not accounted for in the adjusted base. So about $59 million of that is AMHS related. There are 2,599 positions in DOT. Of that, 2,266 are permanent full-time, 238 are permanent part-time, and 95 are temporary. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee considered the governor's operating budget requests and accepted a vast majority of them, rejected all but four items. Of the items that were accepted, many had to do with cost savings related to Office of Information Technology, phone and core rate decreases. There are a number of items that were reversing one-time fund source changes that were made in last year's budget. There were items associated with combining the Northern Region construction component for better, can't think of the word, sorry. There's the funding, rural airport paint striping with federal funds. There's an increase to mission critical pay in the central and northern regions. As I spoke to earlier, we moved the AMHS operating budget back into the numbers section of the bill. And also there were one-time use of federal highway CRISA funds to keep the Silvertip, Birch Lake, and Chittenden maintenance stations open, as well as fund Dalton shift changes, which these were items that we evaluated last year as well. The items that we rejected are one item to replace UGF with motor fuel tax receipts, and we rejected this because of a projected shortfall in that, and by rejecting this one item, we were able to fund two other items that are gonna be using motor fuel taxes, tax receipts. And two items related to a drafting error, and one item related to replacing federal receipts with UGF and the AMHS budget. The House Finance Subcommittee also adopted two member amendments. The first one is intent language, requesting DOT create and implement a method to solicit input and from and consult with local municipalities, community organizations, metropolitan planning organizations, regional transportation planning organizations, and service areas on the creation and revision of the prioritized list of state-maintained roads and highways for snow plowing, and to coordinate these efforts where appropriate with local governments and service areas. That was adopted with a vote of 5-0. And the second amendment that was adopted was to replace $5 million of AMHS fund with federal receipts in the marine vessel operations allocation. And that was also adopted 5-0. And that concludes the DOT subcommittee report.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just curious about the rationale to replace 22.6 million in federal receipts
So the way that our budget action sheet was set up, we adopted a line item that funds the marine vessel highway operations with, I believe it was close to like $98 million in federal funds, and then we backed part of that out to fund it with UGF to replicate the level of funding that it's had over the years. This additional 22.6 would have been an increase in funding over what it had been the last couple of years. And so because that was an increase instead of kind of like a baseline of service, we wanted to keep that as federal receipts instead of UGF.
Follow up?
Yeah, I don't know. Am I misreading it? It says an item to replace 22.6 million federal receipts with UGF in the Marine Highway Vessel Up. So it looks like we took federal money and put UGF in instead. So we raised our general fund liability by almost $23 million.
So that particular item is listed under items we rejected. And excuse me, I meant to say through the chair each time I responded. I just realized I didn't do that. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're fine. Thanks. Briefities. Okay, House Finance back on record at 2:18 p.m. and Representative Rasmussen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was just hoping that the chair for the subcommittee could explain the rationale for using general fund instead of the federal receipts.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair. Absolutely, Representative Rasmussen. The previous funding level last year for the department for AMHS was, I believe, around 70 million or approximately something like that. But with the advent of the IIJA bill that is coming forward, it will do a great deal to restore not only service but the capability of addressing shortcomings of the fleet in terms of maintenance and perhaps building of new ships. But we've had communication with the federal delegation that in order to maintain support for that federal investment in the marine highway system, for lack of a better term, they would like to see skin in the game in relationship to the state having continued commitment to the marine highway system as well, so that it doesn't seem like all of a sudden the marine highway is suddenly going to become a federal venture rather than a state venture, completely federal. So what that does then is when we restore $59 million of UGF going to the marine highway system, that does free up more federal money to address fleet repair, major maintenance, and the building of new ships. So it creates more capital opportunity, which really, ultimately, when we want to see, if in order for the Marine Highway to return to where it was once a number of years ago, we're going to really need to put some money into new ships and ship repair. And so by taking this action, it does two things. It shows the continued commitment of the state of Alaska to the Marine Highway system, and then it frees up money that will allow for more resources going into ship repair, building new ships.
Okay, any further questions on Department of Transportation? Representative Josephson?
Yes, just real quickly, through the chair, for Representative Ortiz, as a teaching moment for your colleague, what does it mean if the AMHS budget, AMHS budget was in numbers, in language, and now it's moving back to numbers, what does that tell us, if anything? And what I mean by that is, do you understand why it was moved to language?
Representative Ortiz.
And is now returning.
Returning back to the number section. You know, I think I'm going to defer that question to my staff person, Caroline Hamp. I know there was some discussion about that, but I think it was just more or less a one-time change that happened at the administration level last year, and this just goes back to the more traditional way that it's always been handled, which has always been handled as a numbers item. But, Ms. Harpold, if you could further elaborate, that'd be great.
Ms. Harpold?
For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Repertez, through the chair. Last year, the legislature funded the AMHS budget for 18 months instead of just a fiscal year. That might be part of the reason. I'm sure there might be a couple other technical reasons, and I'd also like to, if I'm not correct, I'd like Michael Partlow to please come correct me.
Mr. Partlow, you can put yourself on the record.
For the record, Michael Partlow, fiscal analyst with Legislative Finance, and through the chair, Representative Josephson. First, I'd like to say that Liz was correct in her statement, so I'm not here to correct her, but I am here to elaborate a little bit. Last year, when the legislature forward-funded AMHS for 18 months, that required different effective dates for the first 6 months and then the next 12 months of funding for AMHS. And in order to have different effective dates, it was determined that it was best to put it in the language section of the bill, thus allowing the legislature to fund for those different time periods. This year, the funding is being moved back into the numbers section. The slight distinction is that the administration put forward the idea of creating a separate numbers section only for AMHS with a different effective date. Since we're now a full 6 months ahead in our funding, we're now doing a calendar year 23 budget rather than a fiscal year 23 budget. I hope that clarifies your question.
Beautifully. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions on DOT? Representative Wolf?
Chairman, just a quick question in general. The language versus number debate, or not debate, but issue, which has come up in other subcommittees. And I think I know the answer. I just could hear it from a ledge finance person. If it's in numbers or if it's in language, they both contribute equally to the base budget. It's not like anything is one time and the other ones are recurring, right? It's equally a part of the base budget, whether it's numbers or language. Is that correct?
Mr. Partlow?
Michael Partlow, Legislative Finance. Through the chair, Representative Wolf. The language section is backed out every year. It is not part of the base. So that is one major effect of it.
Representative Wolf?
Yeah, I guess I sort of knew the answer in a way because the $69 million was an add because, well, that's ferries, but which is also the subject at hand here. But so language is not base is the answer, even though it's all part of the budget. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any further questions on DOT, so thank you, Mr. Partlow. We'll now move over to Department of Education. I believe Ms. Caroline Hamp will be handling that. So if you'd like to come up and put yourself on the record,
Yes, I got a little bit ahead of myself. I referred to Ms. Harpold as Ms. Ham. My error. Apologize for that.
For the record, I'm Caroline Hamp, staff to Representative Ortiz, subcommittee aide for the Department of Education and Early Development Finance Subcommittee. The deed subcommittee recommended budget totals $366,926,400. Of that, the unrestricted general funds total $83,131,200. Designated general funds total $2,657,200. And other funds total $33,702,400. And federal funds total $247,435,600. The subcommittee recommended budget has a fund increase of 0.6 from the fiscal year 23 adjusted base. The fund sources have a pretty large differential, though. I want to point out that there's an increase of 39.5 in UGF and a decrease of 89% in DGF. Because everything previously funded under the Higher Education Investment Fund is now funded through the UGF and the subcommittee budget because of the reverse sweep. Those programs that were previously funded through the Higher Education Investment Fund are Live Homework Help, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education Admin and Operations, WAMI, the Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards, and the Alaska Education Grants. In regards to positions, there's a net decrease of 3 PCNs in the subcommittee's recommended budget, which leaves us with 245 permanent full-time, 12 permanent part-time, and 4 temporary positions for a total of 261 positions. The subcommittee adopted 21 of 22 budget items proposed by the governor. The one item that the subcommittee rejected was the governor's proposal to expand the WAMI medical education program, which would have been an increase of $1,647,500 in UGF. Both the University of Alaska and Department of Education and Early Development confirmed that they could not use the funds in this upcoming fiscal year. So instead of accepting the funds without plans to be able to utilize the funds, the subcommittee unanimously voted on intent language, which asked DEED to coordinate and have a set plan to expand the program, the WAMI program, in future years. The subcommittee voted 5 yeas, 3 nays to adopt one member amendment that was an increment to the numbers section of the budget, and it was a 2-year temporary increment to pre-kindergarten grants, totaling $2.5 million in UGF for fiscal year 23 and an additional $2.5 million for fiscal year 24. The subcommittee also voted 5 yeas, 3 nays in favor of a language appropriation recommendation to full finance. That was a $50 million increase to the base student allocation. Lastly, the subcommittee did not have a formal amendment on this topic, but did decide to make it a point of concern that DEED failed this past year's disparity test, and dependent on current negotiations and legal outcomes, there may be financial obligations and or legislative action needed to mitigate the situation.
Thank you. Ms. Hamp, I've got two questions regarding WAMI. I think initially the WAMI program itself had asked for this change, but my understanding is that they've since changed their mind and it may require an amendment next week. They are looking at maybe wanting the funds and then restructuring how we do this so that they can receive the funds. Are you familiar with what's going on there?
I can
Representative Ortiz?
You're right, Mr. Chairman. Since the subcommittee adopted the amendment, I've been in further discussions with members of this committee as well as with folks from DEED, and it may be, while the intention language that we have here was adopted unanimously, we may want to actually just look at a budget amendment, which actually puts forward the original requested amount of money, showing really our full intent to commit, the state's full intent to commit to WAMI expansion. And folks from DEED said that that might be a better way to go rather than just with the wordage here. So that'll be up to the consideration of this committee.
Great, thank you. And Representative Thompson.
My understanding is that if we don't utilize or spend that $1.6 million on the WAMI program this 2023, that it would revert back to the general fund. Is that correct?
Ms. Hamp?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson. Yes, that is correct.
Representative Wool?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Sorry for my ignorance on this issue, but I see one of the recommendations was to do a one-time fund of $50 million for K-12, I guess. Where's the K-12 budget embedded in this? You know, the big money, the $1.2 billion. I'm just trying to understand how DEED works in relation to that other funding.
Ms. Hemp?
Through the chair, Representative Wool. Although the subcommittee does not take on the base student allocation, however, K through 12 is an appropriation within the DEED budget. I don't know if that answers your question.
Representative Wool?
Yeah, I guess, is it past? I mean, I see the total is $366 million. So the base student allocation, which is a formula and is funded, does it pass through DEED, or is it a separate item altogether?
If possible, to the chair, actually, if possible, I'd like to defer to Ledge Finance to get into the weeds of this.
We've got anybody who would like to come on up. We've got either Mr. Anderson or the departments. And if you could both go ahead and come up. Oh, good. And if you'd like to both put yourselves on the record.
I'll take first stab at this through the chair, Representative. The actual BSA formula is done in the language section in the sections under fund capitalization. The whole entire formula is laid out, and then there's direction for it then to be dispersed to school districts based off of the size of the allotment of student counts and the rest of the formula. And that is $1.2 billion this year.
Just for the record, that's Mr. Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Foster.
Thank you, Chairman Foster.
And did you have anything to add to that, if you could put yourself on the record?
Kelly O'Sullivan, Legislative Finance. Nope, I think that explains it.
Okay, Representative Wool, and then Representative Rasmussen Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. And I should have guessed it based on my earlier question about numbers and language, but it doesn't always, I think budget, so it's in the language section. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I guess my question is, so the $50 million was intent language, it wasn't an addition through the subcommittee?
Representative Ortiz.
That is correct.
I guess just a quick follow-up on that. It's my understanding that the districts, for the most part, have pretty high balances in their carry forward, or I don't know what the account is called off the top of my head, but I feel like I recall after our DEED presentation seeing that it was somewhere in the ballpark of $600 million for all the districts. And so I was kind of curious about the rationale for that. I mean, $50 million is a lot if we're honestly trying to save money this year, which it seems in the press we've stated as a legislature that's our intent. So I'm trying to understand that.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. Representative Rasmussen, while there may be remaining federal funds that are unspent in some of the districts, we've heard loud and clear, at least with the, you know, through my office, we've heard loud and clear from across the state that, first of all, the flexibility of some of those funds is not nearly as flexible as the funds that come through the BSA formula. And then second of all, you know, the BSA hasn't been addressed in any meaningful way in the last, I think it's 6 or 7 years. And so I'm hearing that that districts are looking at staff reductions, looking at program reductions, looking at some significant cutbacks here in the very near future. I think the Anchorage School Districts would be one of those, that unless we start to address the issue, that those cuts are going to be coming. So I guess I would specifically answer your question that while there may be some unspent federal funds, I don't think the districts are finding enough flexibility to adjust those funds or put those funds into where they actually need them.
Representative, do we have any follow-up? Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My understanding that using the student counts that we have presently, that adding $50 million would add $195 per student BSA. Does that sound reasonable? Is that what it comes out to? Would be adding $195 to the BSA per student.
Ms. Hamp? Or Kelly O'Sullivan?
Kelly O'Sullivan, Legislative Finance, through the chair, Representative Thompson. Yes, it's about $195 BSA increase equivalent.
And my understanding is currently there's a bill out there right now that would increase the BSA. It's the BSA normally would be a statuting change, and the fiscal note on that, to my understanding, is about $57 million. In just my very informal discussion with folks in the halls, it sounds to me like this $50 million was added in as kind of a backstop, so that if the the bill itself doesn't make it through both the House and the Senate for the BSA increase, then this would be put in, and so maybe it could potentially be added as a with contingency language should the bill fail. I don't know 100% if that's what the intentions are, but it's some of the hall talk I've heard, and because this is a recommendation from the subcommittee, it would be it's not going to be rolled into CS1. But it will be at the discretion of the Finance Committee members here to add that as a an amendment via recommendation from the subcommittee next week when we come to amendments. Do I have, generally speaking, that correct, Representative Ortiz?
Yes, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I think you have it pretty darn close to being exactly right, because I know that the member on the subcommittee that brought forward the amendment spoke in as exact same language. Is more or less, in the event that we don't do anything to the BSA in a ongoing way, that the $50 million would be at least a backstop for a one-time increment, which would, you know, would suffice at least for 1 year. So, yes, definitely. And I don't think it was the intent of the maker of the amendment to say that, or anybody on the committee to say that, oh, well, we're going to adopt a BSA increase and the $50 million. No, those two things do not go hand in hand.
Thank you for the clarification. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, on this discussion of the $50 million equivalent to $195 per student, I think if Representative Sponholz were here, she would note, and she does, and it's been corroborated in a number of hearings, but I guess this is for Chair, for you, Ms. O'Sullivan, the number 500 and some is used per student to reflect loss of value through inflation since, I don't know if it was the last decade or since the last BSA adjustment. Have you heard that sort of number, $500 per student?
Ms. O'Sullivan?
Legislative Finance, Kelly O'Sullivan. There are various versions of that depending on how far back in time you go on the CPI index, but generally that sounds approximately right.
Representative Josephson?
Just to clarify, and I may have missed this, this is for staff, I guess. On page one, the increase is due to replacing SWEP funds. The DGF decrease is the SWEP funds. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is correct. DGF in the deed budget is primarily the Higher Education Investment Fund.
And finally, if I
may, Representative,
on this disparity test issue, is this a federal test of our meeting our obligation to essentially rural or poorer districts vis-a-vis more affluent districts? Is that the disparity test?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, it is a 25 percentile differential between the lowest and highest funded per student districts. And so this past year, DEED failed the disparity test, primarily because in the formula used by the federal government, they included the people transportation, which they have not included in past years. So our DEED is currently negotiating with the federal government to either not include people transit or do some other way of calculating the disparity test.
Okay, any further questions on education? Seeing none, thank Representative Carpenter.
Mr. Kochar, I'd like to go back to the WAMI discussion for just a second. The subcommittee rejected the $1.6 million in UGF for the governor's proposal to increase the WAMI program, and I don't know how many students that means. And then the subcommittee declined to accept that and instead put in a tent language to push the question off to the next budget cycle as to whether we would increase funding for WAMI, directing that the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education and the University of Alaska shall coordinate and plan for growth of a program that a future legislature may or may not decide to fund. Is that kind of where we sit right now?
And Representative Ortiz? Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I can just say I think they the Subcommittee for Education adopted this at the request of the WAMI program, and they have since changed their mind and now would like to accept the funds, and so I think there will likely be an amendment next week to accept those funds. Ms. Hamp or Representative Ortiz, do you have any?
And just for a little bit more clarification, Representative Carpenter, at the time when the subcommittee took the action, we were receiving information that while everybody on the committee certainly supported the potential opportunity for expanding WAMI, that the proposal was put forward in the governor's budget without the it didn't appear that there was enough homework being done, particularly with the University of Washington. You know, we were hoping to grow the program by 12 students, but that didn't necessarily mean that the University of Washington and their educational program that they offer would be able to just adapt to 12 new positions that they, you know, and so we were told at that time that they wouldn't be ready to, quote, accept that kind of money or be able to use that kind of money. However, since that time, it's come to our attention, just like Representative Thompson spoke about earlier, that by showing the intent, but actually putting forward the money, we may still not be able to utilize it and be able to get the University of Washington to adjust quickly enough, but it certainly will show our intent by putting the money there that we're committed to the program, that we want to see this expansion of the program, and so that's why, you know, if we do pursue an amendment in this committee, I would be supportive of that amendment to actually put forward the money. And then if it's not being able to be utilized, it would just go into the general fund at that point.
Thank you.
Well, okay. Representative Thompson and then Wolf.
Thank you again, Mr. Co-Chair. It's also my understanding that there was a concern that if you have a student that is considering going into the medical field and we haven't shown that we are going to try to move this forward to expand the program, that a lot of those students might not go to school at the universities here in Alaska, where 80% of them, when they graduate, come back as doctors.
Thank you. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. And I don't want to go too far in the weeds on this, but it's been mentioned that maybe Washington can't handle the additional Alaska students. Is there any sort of equity formula between Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, Idaho, that if we add 10, they all get to add a bunch? Are we all equal partners in WAMI as far as the five states? And I know there's probably more students at the University of Washington Medical School than just WAMI students, but, and this can be answered later, but it just occurred to me, if we add a bunch, do the other states in WAMI also?
Mr. Anderson?
Through the chair, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Through the chair, Representative, we can look into that for you. We are continually talking with the WAMI program currently to work out the details of this potential amendment or change to the CS that would happen. To, if I could, Mr. Chairman, if address also concerns from Representative. Also, the other thing that is being factored in is if this amendment gets changed, it would probably be a language amendment that would roll down to the language amendments rather than numbers. So then it could be a multi-year appropriation, which would give the sign of good faith that Alaska is committed to expanding the WAMI program this year, but then also allow that money to carry forward into FY24. So then if it takes 2 years of negotiations, that money would still be on the table as a commitment to expanding the WAMI program when all parties are capable of fulfilling the obligations.
Further questions? Okay, seeing no questions on education, thank you very much, Ms. Hamp, Ms. O'Sullivan, Mr. Anderson. We'll now move over to Representative Merrick, who has three committees, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Public Safety, and Natural Resources. If we could have Ms. Jamie Jones come up, staff to Representative Merrick, and go ahead and put yourself on the record, and I think you'll be doing the presentation of the reports.
Yep.
If you could put yourself on the record, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Jamie Jones, staff to Representative Merrick. Today I'll be presenting three agency fiscal year 2023 House Finance Budget Subcommittee narrative reports. I'll start with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Our recommendation matches the governor's request, the numbers only budget, but the amendment recommendation totals are $15,437,800 of unrestricted general funds, $28,500 of designated general funds, $11,913,300 of other funds, and $31,191,100 of federal funds, for a total of $58,570,700. Under positions, there are 262 full-time positions, and there are no part-time or temporary positions. The subcommittee held three meetings. There were no member amendments for consideration. And this completes the actions taken by Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Subcommittee.
Okay, do we have any questions, comments on Representative Rasmussen?
I guess the former Representative Kropp was correct in saying that our colleague here, co-chair, is efficient as a chair and a co-chair.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions on DMVA, so we'll go ahead and jump over to Department of Public Safety.
Do you want to do Public Safety or Natural Resources?
Either one.
Okay. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Natural Resources submits the following recommendation for the 2023 operating budget. The numbers only budget with amendment recommendation totals are $71,034,200 of unrestricted general funds, $42,205,700 of designated general funds, $38,396,900 of other funds, and $17,825,900 of federal funds, for a total of $169,462,700. Under positions, the recommendations are 671 permanent full-time positions, 251 permanent part-time positions, and 64 temporary positions, for a total of 986 positions. The subcommittee held 9 meetings and accepted all budget action items proposed. The subcommittee also passed 2 member amendments, an amendment that increases the Division of Oil and Gas Receipt Authority by an additional $755,600 and deletes the corresponding amount from UGF, and an amendment that adds $750,000 of UGF to the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. This amendment allows the division to accelerate the collection of data over material-rich portions of the state, and this completes actions taken by the Department of Natural Resources Subcommittee.
Okay. Any questions from the committee on DNR? I see no questions, so we'll go ahead and move over to the Department of Public Safety.
The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Public Safety submits the following recommended operating budget for FY23. The numbers only budget with amendment recommendation totals are $215,177,500 of unrestricted general funds, $8,669,700 of designated general funds, $13,239,800 of other funds, and $36,449,200 of federal funds, for a total of $273,536,200. Under positions, the recommendations are 965 permanent full-time positions, 12 permanent part-time positions, 27 temporary positions, for a total of 1,004 positions. The subcommittee for DPS held 10 meetings and accepted 59 of the 63 proposed budget action items. The rejected items are budget action item 12, the Alaska State Trooper, Alaska State Trooper Detachment. This was a technical correction, and no vote was needed to make that correction. Budget action items 24, 39, and 62, Alaska State Trooper, Alaska State Trooper Detachments, add full funding for the FY 2021 filled positions were also rejected. The subcommittee passed 5 member amendments, 4 of which were intent language. I'll summarize the amendments, Mr. Chair. The full text can be found in the packets and on basis. An intent language amendment to increase efforts to fill vacant positions within the state troopers and reduce overtime. The amendment requests 2 reports from the Department of Public Safety regarding overtime costs and actions taken to address overtime. An intent language amendment stating that no fund shall be moved outside of the personal services line of any allocation within the Alaska State Trooper appropriation. An intent language amendment prioritizing law enforcement resources in the department to non-urbanized areas lacking organized governments. And lastly, an intent language amendment focused on DPS and village public safety officer collaboration to improve recruitment and retention, provide spending flexibility, and identify regional training opportunities. The department shall work to utilize funds from the tribal and local governments and regional native corporations to support these goals. Amendment number 4 moves $300,000 of UGF from the services line for Alaska Family Justice Center model study to the domestic violence and sexual assault victim services grant support allocation. And amendment number 8 was also adopted by the subcommittee. This amendment seeks to establish a new retention unit allocation with the transfer of funds and positions. This was a structural change which was outside the subcommittee's purview. The amendment recommends that this change be considered by the full House Finance Committee. And this concludes the recommendations for DMVA, DNR, and DPS subcommittees.
My packet had DOT and the public safety. Did everybody else have the public safety report in their packet? You have the public safety? You had it? Okay. So maybe I was just the only one who, okay. Okay, so everybody was following along okay? Sounds good. Anybody have questions? Representative Wool?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair. I was looking at the Madam Chair, and I said Mr. Chair. One question. Real quick, if it's possible, there's an increase in $21 million. Is that a fund movement around item? Because I don't see any of the amendments that are that large. Is there one thing or two things that you could summarize what the $21 million goes to?
Through the chair, I'll have Legislative Finance answer that.
Through the chair, Morgan Foss, Legislative Finance. It is the cumulative effect of increments requested by the agency and approved by the subcommittee.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow up. I think what I heard you say is these are the governor's budget additions approved by the subcommittee. Okay. Is there one or two things that stand out, or is it many smaller items? And if so, you don't need to list them all. I was just curious if there's one.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I think it is most accurate to describe it as multiple smaller items and not one particular significant large item.
Thank you. I'll look it up.
Okay. Further questions, Representative Josephson?
Chair, either for staff or Legislative Finance, the amendment to seek a new retention unit, all I know about the retention unit is that the Department of Corrections wanted to mirror it because they thought it was so impressive. So I'm just curious about that part.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, again, Morgan Foss, for the record, there is a retention unit within the Alaska State Trooper Detachment's allocation, and the proposed amendment would have moved that unit into its own allocation and then moved the resources associated with that function to that new allocation.
Follow-up?
So is it designed to sort of enhance and strengthen the unit? Is that the, and to make it more prominent and more effective? Is that the idea?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the proposal looks at a structure change specifically. It does not add funding, but it would allow the legislature to track exactly how much funding is appropriated and then spent from that allocation, and that could inform other decisions.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions for Department of Public Safety, that's concludes the reports that we have for today. Thank you very much, Ms. Foss and Jamie. So if we have no further items, that will wrap up our today's meeting, and our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Carpenter.
I have a housekeeping question or a question regarding all of these sheets, the recommendation sheets coming from the subcommittees regarding the positions. What is listed here are permanent full-time, permanent part-time, temporary, and a total. And those are what appear to be total numbers, but it doesn't indicate a change. So am I to assume that if there was a change, I would have to go to the actual number sheets to find that change?
Mr. Anderson, would you like to?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, you can, at the top of the BA sheet that looks like this, the budget, right here in the corner, it'll tell you all the changes.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Jones. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, again, tomorrow at 9 a.m. is our next meeting. And at that meeting, Co-Chair Merrick will be hearing House Bill 166 regarding license plates, as well as House Bill 177 regarding revised program appropriations. So with that, we will be adjourned at 2:59 p.m. Thank you.